I'm Dr. Elliot Hirsch, board-certified plastic and reconstructive surgeon in Sherman Oaks, California. In my practice, I've done extensive plastic and reconstructive surgery, and I've seen it all, the good, the botched, and everything in between. On Skin Deep, we're going to discuss the latest and greatest in plastic and reconstructive surgery, all about injectables and health overall. I'll also have some exciting guests joining me to discuss various aspects of health and beauty. So tune in every Saturday morning at 8 a.m. right here on Go Country 105. Good morning, everybody. Happy Saturday. Thanks for tuning in for another episode of Skin Deep. We have a very special guest with us here today. It's my cousin, Janice Hirsch. Janice is a comedic writer who's worked with Hollywood legends such as John Belushi, Chevy Chase, Christopher Guest, and she's written for such shows as Will and Grace, Frasier, The Nanny, and Murphy Brown. When Janice was a child, she was infected with polio. For those of you who don't know, polio or poliomyelitis was a common disease in children in the early to mid 20th century. In most people, there were minor symptoms or even no symptom of infection at all, but in a rare subset of patients, under 1% were affected by something called paralytic myelitis, which was a nervous system infection which may have occasionally caused permanent neuromuscular disorders. In the 1950s, Jonas Salk developed a vaccine that prevented infection, which effectively ended the epidemic and ushered in a new era of vaccination and eradication of many early childhood diseases, such as pertussis, measles, and other viral illnesses. Janice is going to talk with us today about her experience with polio and how it affected her career in Hollywood and how it still affects her life today. Janice, welcome to Skin Deep.
Thank you for having me.
My pleasure. Thanks for taking time out of your Saturday. I know you've got a lot going on right now.
Well, happily, it was about 2 months ago. You were there.
Yes.
My son Charlie got married to the most wonderful woman in the world, Jordan. Like, I never had a daughter. Mm-hmm. And she calls me every morning to say hello. We discuss what we're doing to evacuate our bowels. We discuss where we're buying our produce and our... And she calls them bubbies when she makes a chicken. She calls it a bubby.
So we talk about everything.
Yeah, with everything in the world. She's the greatest. So I'm a happy, happy girl.
You know, we were at that wedding. I had a great time. It was at a restaurant. The food was fantastic.
Yeah.
I ate so much pizza as it came out of the oven. It was really good.
An open pizza bar. I mean, that's what Jews do, right?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. Open pizza bar. And then the open bar was pretty nice, too.
Oh, yeah. That was good, too.
They had a lot of top shelf alcohol.
Yes.
They had a bottle of Japanese whiskey that I don't think they were supposed to have given me a glass of, but it was fantastic. It was really a fun night. We had a good time.
Yeah, it was great. It was great.
What are you doing now work-wise? What are you up to?
I did a couple weeks just as a consultant on the HBO Max mega hit, who knew, called Hacks with Gene Smart and Hannah Einbinder, and it won Emmys all over the place.
Mm-hmm.
And I had no idea. I mean, I was just consulting because I called myself the old lady whisperer because Gene Smart character is not Joan Rivers, but she's an older stand-up comic who's just got a residency in Vegas, and they're trying to edge her out to bring in some young act, and she's staying relevant. And it was just a blast to do all I did. I mean, there were so many fabulous younger writers, but I would talk to them about what it was like back in the day.
Mm-hmm.
Because the writers, Lucia Agnello, who was the director and one of the writers, and Jen Statsky, also one of the, she's one of the creators too, with Lucia and Paul W. Downs, they'd never been on a show with a male showrunner. And I'd never been on a show with a female showrunner until, I think, Murphy had, well, we had a titular guy head, but Diane English was running it. But there just wasn't such a thing. There was always one woman on a show, and now there are all these women. It was great. It was just fabulous.
There are a lot of skincare products on the market right now. I know it can be difficult to find which products really deliver results. I'm Dr. Elliot Hirsch, board-certified plastic and reconstructive surgeon in Los Angeles, and I recommend Aura RX Skin products. Aura RX Skin combines medical-grade ingredients and the power of botanicals to get you results you can see. Visit orarxskin.com to see the full line. That's ORARXSkin.com, and breathe new life into your skin. It's interesting to hear you kind of saying these names, and you and I have talked before about John Belushi and Gilda Radner and all of like the legendary National Lampoon actors and actresses. One thing that I've always wondered, and we'll get to our topic in a little bit, but one thing I've always wondered is when you're working with people like that, do you know that they're going to become legendary and what you're working on is going to become something so successful, or it's just you're in the moment, John Belushi's smashing stuff and it's just what he's doing?
I knew he was really talented. I knew Gilda was really talented, and Billy Murray and Harold Ramis, these people were all abundantly talented, really funny, but so were a lot of other people. And it never occurred to me. And then, I mean, they were making like $350 a week or something, because they were highly paid.
Sure.
Because I was bringing home $95.62 as the girl. And SNL started the year that because I went to the first episode. John had me come to the first episode because he couldn't give away tickets.
Mm-hmm.
And it never occurred to us that they were going to be stars. And even after the first couple weeks of Saturday Night Live, they were still just our friends. And then I went to one, I used to go to the cast parties, and then one cast party, I looked around and saw all these really famous people around them. And I went, oh, they're really famous now. And they're still lovely people.
Yeah.
But I just went, okay, I don't need to go to these parties anymore. You know, I'll see them when I see them. But I don't, it was a fascinating transition. And the same goes, I mean, listen, when you're working on Murphy Brown or working with Bette Midler, some of you know that they're famous, but you don't know, who knew that Candace Bergen was going to be a fantastic comedian and win, a bazillion Emmys until she did it?
What has the change been, you think, in the culture of the writer's room from in those days when you were with people who were coming up and they were not famous yet, but you could see the talent, versus today when you go into a writer's room and you have people who are already, I guess, established, and the culture, what's the difference?
Well, we had that then. And I'm ashamed to say that when the famous writers, the established writers would come into the room when I was just starting out, we thought of, oh, look at these old guys. and we sort of made fun of them, but just when they'd pitch something and they'd pitch a joke that was corny or something. Because when I was starting out, the ones who were aging out had worked on Father Knows Best and had worked on early, Sid Caesar
early
and stuff.
Sitcoms, yeah.
They really, really did early stuff. There was a woman that I worked with on Square Pegs, which was the show where Sarah Jessica Parker was introduced. And she was a writer, Susan Silver. I'm apologizing now to you about her. And she was really nice and funny, but I really didn't know much about her. And I guess I wasn't curious because, you're arrogant at that age, or at least I was arrogant at that age. I had a good job And then later in life, I realized she was the original Mary Tyler Moore and the first woman writer on this show and the first woman comedy writer on that. And I felt horrible that I had never taken 5 minutes of my precious schedule to say, tell me what was going on with you.
Yeah. Well, that's again my question of what's changed, you think, in the writer's room? Do you think do you have more people now who are, I don't know what the term is, full of themselves, or is the culture different, or?
I've been in two writer's rooms where I wasn't comfortable, and it was just because it was a bad fit. I mean, it wasn't because they were bad. Because there's every room has a personality.
Culture.
Yeah, a culture, and some of them are very erudite and quiet and learned, and some are very free form, and some can be gross. I mean, when I was on It's Gary Shandling show. It was pretty misogynistic. I mean, I was the only woman on the show for the first six episodes, which is as long as I lasted. And I wrote two of those first episodes, and I was in Gary's office one day pitching something to Gary, and I felt a tap on my shoulder. And then the next day, the executive producer called me into his office and said, I hear there's a problem. And I went, oh, yes, thank you. Because they were referring to the slit scene meant the scene with the woman in it, stuff like that. And I said, oh, thank you for knowing that. Yeah, it was a, there is a problem. He said, so what are you going to do about it? And I went, why do I have to do something about it? And he went, well, I think you should quit. And I went, really? I should quit? And he said, yeah, I think that'd be best.
What year was this?
Around 80, I'm going to say 85, 86, around there.
Very different now.
Oh, my God. Yeah. Can you imagine?
Oh, there's no chance. Where'd you go from there?
Well, people said, oh, you should sue. Well, it was, the company was Brillstein Gray, which at the time was the biggest management and production company in LA, and they handled all the Lampoon people, and they did Ghostbusters, and, you know, Animal Health, everything. And so people said, you should sue. And I said, I'm a baby writer.
Mm-hmm.
And they're the biggest company in the world, so I'm not going to sue. Also, I want a career.
Right.
And I'm not going to have a career after this. So what I decided to do, and it wasn't really I didn't really think it out, but what I found myself doing is in every room I'd go to afterward, I would tell that story, sort of the way like on Game of Thrones where you put your enemy's head on a spike and it just says, just beware, if you enter here, this is what's going to happen. And I would tell that story, and it would get some laughs and get disgusting. People were grossed out, because it was also my way of saying, you're not going to get me. Whatever you throw at me, I've had worse. Believe me, I have had so much worse.
Well, it also establishes kind of boundaries, I think, when you go into a writer.
Not really. No.
Do you want plastic surgery? I'm Dr. Elliot Hirsch, board-certified plastic and reconstructive surgeon here in Los Angeles. I specialize in breast surgery, liposuction, and non-surgical skincare treatments. Using the latest procedures and meticulous safety protocols, your health and well-being are my top priority. So visit my website at hirschplasticsurgery.com, that's H-I-R-S-C-H plasticsurgery.com, or call me at 818-825-8131 for a consultation. That's 818-825-8131. It's an interesting thing, too, with kind of our culture now and how you look at these days. And we were just talking before when we went on the air here, we were talking about the Chappelle show and the recent kind of the blowback he's gotten for what was a very funny thing, but a lot of people were offended by that. You think about how culture has responded to that versus the things you're telling me now. I mean, it's very different.
It's very different, but I remember when I was on Square Pegs, and Square Pegs was my first job in LA, and it was in about 82, I want to say.
Okay.
And before we went on the air, because it was Norman Lear's production company, and before we went on the air, we got hate mail.
About what?
That we were going to be on the air. Because don't forget, Norman Lear had done Maude, which had racy subject matter. He had done controversial shows where they talked about controversial things. Even One Day at a Time was controversial. Just the fact that she was a single mother of two children was controversial at the time. And so there were mothers groups, it's probably two women and who knows where, but who were writing letters saying, get this show off the air. And the thing that I was saying before, earlier to you about Chappelle, is the same thing that I would have responded in the 80s, which is, you don't have to watch it.
Mm-hmm.
That's the beauty of TV. You can turn it on, turn it off. There's a channel I don't like, I don't watch it. There's a show I don't like, it doesn't matter. So, but they would just, they'd make trouble. They tried to get advertisers to pull away.
Mm-hmm.
That was the goal. And I think that was the same goal with Chappelle, trying to get Netflix to not back him or for him to lose sponsorships or whatever.
It's again, like you said, you don't have to watch. You don't have to listen. And there's so many different mediums out there for TV that if you don't like something, you can change the channel. There's 300 other things that you like. We were talking before, I really enjoy the show Big Mouth, which is, it's so raunchy and over the top. You know, it's not something that if you're under 18 to 21, you should even be thinking about watching.
Right.
But I've told a lot of people about that show. Some people have told me that it's hilarious and they love it. And some people have told me that it's just something they can't get through the first episode. And you know, the first episode kind of encompasses the whole show. And if you can get through that first episode, and I remember the first episode, I had to pause it so many times because I was laughing so hard I was missing the dialogue. And so that's kind of how it is. And I never understand why people are so offended by something that you can just change the channel.
Yeah, you don't have to watch it. You don't have to watch it. You don't have to read it. It's all done.
Do you feel like your face is due for a refresh? I'm Dr. Elliot Hirsch from the show Skin Deep. We have a full-service med spa with all the cutting-edge injectables and lasers to smooth and contour your face with minimal downtime and excellent results. Don't wait to look and feel amazing. Call now, 818-825-8131. That's 818-825-8131, or visit hirschplasticsurgery.com for more information. Let's switch gears a little bit. I wanted to talk kind of about your experience with polio and how that also has impacted your career. But you told me something very interesting. So when you got polio, you were 10 months old. So obviously you don't remember what that actually was like. But you said you found your mom's diary recently.
Yes.
Tell me how did she describe that experience?
It was very clinical, which I think she had to do for her own sanity.
Mm-hmm.
So it would just be how much she hated every doctor.
Okay.
She would just say, fie on him or something, whatever. Yeah. It was, because I know that one day in August I was sitting in my high chair and the next minute I had slid on the floor.
Because mm-hmm.
it was just that quick, you know, and then you get the fever. And then my mother and my sister and I were quarantined. My father wasn't interested in being quarantined.
Okay.
So he stayed away. Caring dad, you knew him to be.
Sure, sure.
But the thing I always say, jokingly but not, is if you have to get a debilitating childhood disease, get polio, because you get really, really sick, and then you constantly can get better if you work.
Right.
And that has been, that metaphor has shaped my entire life. If someone once said to me, if you could lose 5 pounds of belly fat permanently or never have had polio, what would you do? And I said, oh, 5 pounds. It was not even a question, because it's about hard work and about adapting, and some stuff you can't do and you fall down a lot, and it's about getting up. I mean, it's every cliche on every poster with a kitten hanging from a branch. It's every one of those cliches, but it's true. I was certainly not raised as a hothouse flower, and so I couldn't go to my regular elementary school for the first 2 years because I couldn't walk upstairs. I had to have some surgeries before I could do that.
Well, let me back up a second.
Yeah.
So polio, for those of you who don't remember, and really nobody these days, there's no excuse for people having polio because the vaccinations have been around for so long and they're so successful and so safe that as long as people have access to it, it's something that should be done. And with polio specifically, that's a disease that has pretty much been eradicated. When people would get it, most of the time, I remember reading that over 70% of illnesses, there were zero symptoms.
I had no idea.
30% had minor cold, flu symptoms, and then less than 1% would have what you experienced with the myelitis and the neuromuscular symptoms. So you probably saw other kids who had it, but a lot of people got it without problems.
Right. And, you know, because as I looked back, the newspapers every summer would have, at least in Trenton where I grew up, had polio cases every day on the top of the headline, because it was usually children. It wasn't only children.
Mm-hmm.
Lots of adults got it, but it was, people were terrified. And when I think about what's going on now with people not wanting to take a vaccine, I am enraged. And I have confronted when I have met, you know, somebody who believes they're a medical expert because they, you know, I wrote an episode of Saint Elsewhere. I'm a doctor. That was my thing. But these people, you know, because they watched The Resident, they think they're a doctor, and they're anti-vaxxers. And I go, okay, if you're cool with this, with my brace, mm-hmm. and my severely atrophied leg and my crutches, and, you know, because it does get worse later on. The metaphor only lasts for the first 50 years. But if you're cool with that, go ahead. But why are you doing that? Why are you playing Russian roulette with your kids' lives when it doesn't have to be?
And that's when you said that thing about the headlines with the polio numbers, and I would assume that in measles season, I mean, polio was more of a summertime thing.
Yeah, summer.
There was a lot of spread from swimming pools and standing water.
Right.
When you said that thing about the headlines, I would imagine in the winter, it was measles season.
Probably.
And there were probably headlines of measles and people understanding where the outbreaks were, because back then there was nothing that could be done to prevent these things.
Right.
And it seems so simple that if you just take a shot, then it goes away and it's not a problem.
People were lining up for it. People were rejoicing. And Salk said that he never took a patent on the polio vaccine. Mm-hmm. He said it would be like patenting the sun. It's something that's good for you, and there's no patent. And when you look at right now with Pfizer Moderna, suing Moderna and Moderna trying to get J&J, it's crazy. This is something that's saving lives. It's also the reason why I can never lie about my age, because I've had a disease that was virtually eradicated by 1955.
Yeah, kind of dates you a little bit.
So I really can only lie so much. I can go a year maybe. But
well, that's what people like me are for.
Yes,
so
thanks.
Nobody will ask you your age.
All right, good. Thank you.
There are a lot of skincare products on the market right now. I know it can be difficult to find which products really deliver results. I'm Dr. Elliot Hirsch, board-certified plastic and reconstructive surgeon in Los Angeles, and I recommend Aura RX Skin products. Aura RX Skin combines medical-grade ingredients and the power of botanicals to get you results you can see. Visit orarxskin.com to see the full line. That's orarxskin.com, and breathe new life into your skin. Do you remember when you were in school, or I guess going to physical therapy?
Yeah.
You saw other polio patients in therapy?
I saw I went to physical therapy in a hospital in Trenton. And I just remember rows of men in iron lungs. I don't recall ever seeing a woman. That could have just been me.
Mm-hmm.
'Cause, and their heads, they were sticking out of these giant metal tubes that just your head stuck out of the end, like the hot dog part of sticking out of the bun. And it was just a head that couldn't move.
Mm.
And I would see these men's eyes and looking at me, and I felt so guilty for being able to walk. And I was walking with two braces and crutches.
Sure.
But I still felt guilty.
And they were in there like pretty much permanently, right?
I guess. I don't know whatever happened to them.
Yeah.
And then I would go swimming at the local Y after school, and it would be, that's where I met my physical therapist, who was from Czechoslovakia. She'd left the war. We never asked her what side she was on, but I remember distinctly that her son-in-law was a U-boat captain. So there's some questions you don't ask.
Yeah.
But
especially in the early 1950s.
Right, and I'd go to Princeton twice a week, and we'd do physical therapy. But there were a couple of polio patients swimming, and then otherwise it was Down syndrome.
Mm-hmm.
And Mrs. Rehfeld, her name, she said to me and to a guy who I had a huge crush on, who had polio, I think, in his arm, and she said, I'll take you both as private patients. And I remember thinking, it's like I'm a star. I've been picked out of the chorus to be a leading lady. I mean, I really was out of my mind, but that's what I thought. And so I went to her twice a week.
Yeah.
I went swimming twice a week, and I went to her twice a week after school. Till I went to college,
and that was the main physical therapy was swimming,
and then she would walk, and she'd give me instructions, and she'd tell me to think with my toe and whatever, and periodically, and my mother would just sit in a chair and read or do whatever she had to do, and periodically when I'd be walking back and forth, and she'd be going, put your knee under you, don't throw your hip, and then she'd trip me. And I go flying, and my
the
mother
therapist would trip you?
Trip me.
Huh.
I go sprawling, and my mother would, and she'd say, Mrs. Hirsch, she's going to fall. She better learn how to get up.
Sounds like that Eastern European mindset there.
Yeah, it was. She's going to do it. And I did, and so I, 9 times out of 10, I know to arch my back. I know to protect my head. I know to use my hands.
Right.
I know to roll, that kind of stuff. But she was right. I had to learn how to do it. And you have to learn how to fall, and you have to learn how to get up. Another metaphor
for life.
For life.
Do you want plastic surgery? I'm Dr. Elliot Hirsch, board-certified plastic and reconstructive surgeon here in Los Angeles. I specialize in breast surgery, liposuction, and non-surgical skincare treatments. Using the latest procedures and meticulous safety protocols, your health and well-being are my top priority. So visit my website at hirschplasticsurgery.com. That's H-I-R-S-C-H plasticsurgery.com. Or call me at 818-825-8131 for a consultation. That's 818-825-8131. This is, as what you are talking, there are more things I want to talk about, and we're just kind of scratching the surface of your experience with polio, and unfortunately, we are out of time. So I think for today, we'll call it a wrap. We'll have you come back again next week.
Thank you.
In the meantime, if there's any, if people want to hear more about you or know what you're working on, do you have any social media that they could check you out at?
Yeah, it's Janis, J-A-N-I-S underscore Hirsch, H-I-R-S-C-H. And I'm on Twitter and Instagram like that.
Perfect. And for those of you who are out there who want to know more about what I do, you can find me at www.hirschplasticsurgery.com. That's H-I-R-S-C-H plasticsurgery.com. You can follow us on Instagram at Hirsch Plastic Surgery, or give us a call, 818-825-8131. That's pretty much it for today. Thanks everybody for listening. Please tune in next week. You'll hear me talking to my cousin Janis a bit more. And until then, remember that beauty is not just skin deep.